And now for another episode, Heard It Through the Rose Vine, with your host, the creator of Black Rose Writing, Raygun Brody.
Greetings and salutations. This is Raygun Brody, the host of Heard It Through the Rose Vine, signing on for another episode. And yes, we are still here. No co-host today. We've got a really great interview coming up in just a few seconds with Nicholas Eric, and Nicholas is going to take a deep dive into, you know, the importance and finer intricates of Amazon, BookBub, Facebook, all of those paid ads. So we're going to get right to it. The only thing I, you know, would love to announce is next week after this podcast airs, we will be adding a wonderful addition to Black Rose Writing. Minna Rohde will be coming, my wife will be coming on as the advertising and marketing executive. So let's get right to our guest. Our guest today is Nicholas Eric. Nicholas is the sci-fi and fantasy author of over 20 books. For fellow indie authors, he writes comprehensive marketing guides and has a newsletter on how to sell more books, build your fan base, and be more productive. Welcome to the show, Nicholas. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So how's, you know, first off, I know you're, you know, you're a fellow author. How is your writing going? I mean, I know you're not actively writing as much, but how's that going, and how's your marketing going?
It's going well. You know, I think the stuff that I do for clients and other authors, that has grown over the past year, so that's taken a front seat, and looking forward to getting back to the writing, actually writing a novel now and applying the ads and marketing stuff that I talk about to that. So looking forward to getting that book done. It's been a long process writing that. I used to write a lot faster, but slowed down a little bit right now.
I can understand that. So I haven't written, the last novel I finished was, I mean, it's been, I would say 8 plus years. And a few children's books I've had illustrated between then, but nothing in a long time. And I recently started like actually putting some words, like some good words, you know, getting the 500 plus words a day in, and have made enough progress where I've probably got about a third of a new novel done. And my motivation right now is exactly what you kind of touched on. It's almost like you've learned, you know, through doing so many ads and stuff for our authors at Black Rose Writing and learning so much, that it's almost like I want to, you know, I want to apply that to, you know, one of my own books again, like things that I didn't apply back then, I can apply now. And it's like, so that's my muse. It's like, I need to finish this book so I can market it differently than I did all the rest of them.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd like to do it just to show people some things behind the scenes. Since it's my own stuff, then I can share the numbers and break down some things and test different ideas too. So for just hopefully other people as well, that will be helpful on the newsletter and things like that. So almost done, looking to get that finished in the next few days, actually. So we'll see if that happens.
Oh, well, congrats on that. That's always an exciting time. And it's a big accomplishment. I don't think, you know, some people pump out, you know, they pump out 10 books a year, and it's like they're in their own little world and their own little breed. But for everyone else, finishing a novel is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, especially once you know a bit about the marketing, you just know how long of a road it can be. And as long as you're enjoying that, I think then you can take that next step. Sometimes it's frustrating when the books don't sell or something goes wrong with a launch or a promotion, and that can derail you a little bit. So there can be a situation where you know a little bit too much or are taking in too much information. So if that sounds like anybody out there, certainly have had that experience. You know, sometimes it can be good to disconnect from the marketing just a little bit and focus on writing the book and letting the chips fall where they may, because you never are quite sure how a book is going to do in terms of reader response, sales. You can put your best foot forward, get the marketing ducks in a row, write the best book you can, but ultimately book marketing is an imperfect science and art, and we're always learning. So just going to try to get that out there and see what happens.
What are you currently reading?
I mostly read marketing and business type of books, nonfiction. So the book I'm currently reading or just finished up rereading for the third time is a book called Almost Alchemy by Dan Kennedy. So if anybody wants to dive into marketing and things like that, it's definitely a book that I would recommend. It has a lot of applications that you can take away for the book market. You have to obviously do some adaptation there since it's more about small business, but that is currently what I just finished up. And with books, I try to read books that had a lot of insights in them, again, because what you'll find is as you grow and evolve as a marketer and just as a person, the things that you pick up are different. And a good book is almost like reading a different book upon rereading. So it's definitely worth diving into those multiple times when you find something that is really useful, because there are fewer of those useful books out there in the nonfiction realm than you might think. So when I find a gem, I try to mine as many insights as I can from it over the years.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I also find when I read anything that is marketing or nonfiction, you know, maybe I'll see a new book on Amazon ads or just anything like that. It's almost like you're reading, you know, not that you don't already know almost all of the stuff that's in the book, that's going to be in the book, I guess, you know, you've experienced all of it, but you're looking for those little tidbits that you've maybe you've gotten sloppy on or you've forgotten, like, and it's almost like a good refresher. Like you'll read something again and that'll be like, you know, why did I stop doing it this way? You know, you switch gears a little bit and when that way was, you know, working better, you know, and then you can kind of go back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, since you're at a different point in your career, each time you read a good book, what happens is you may not have been ready for a certain message, or it may not have been relevant at that point. So your brain just didn't really register. And then when you reread it, it's a time that you have the resources or the skills, or you just have that specific problem and it really stands out. And that's something that is always a little bit surprising when you reread, because you think that, okay, I got everything out of this the first time around, but certainly books that have depth in that way reveal layers as you reread them. So that's one that I would recommend. Another one that's definitely a good one is Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb. And that's just about how to survive in volatile environments. So he comes from a trading background, which is obviously a very volatile environment, but certainly as authors, we have peaks and valleys where releases and promotions and marketing endeavors sometimes work and other times they don't. And a lot of times the reason for that doesn't reveal itself ever. And it's just about being able to not only survive in those type of environments, but harness that inherent volatility to your benefit. So that's another one that I'd recommend for reading and rereading as well.
Yeah, that's a great point you made on the, you know, reading something that doesn't really reveal itself until later, you know, in your career. It's like, you know, anytime you read new information, you know, it's the difference between someone who might have read a whole book about how to fix a car engine versus someone who's been fixing car engines for 40 years. You know, I mean, there's a big difference in their experience kicks in, and you know, that person who's been fixing them can read that book and interpret all that data to exactly what they've been doing, while the other person can read it all and they think they know it all, but they haven't experienced it yet. So, you know, there's a lot of variation in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
What do you think is the most important And we can kind of go through these a little bit, but if you had to order them, what is most important for an author between having Amazon Kindle reviews, editorial reviews, or book awards on their metadata?
I'd say Amazon reviews. I'd say none of those are particularly important, though, in my experience, especially because Amazon now allows people to leave ratings. So reviews used to be the only way that you could get those stars on the Amazon book page, but now you can leave a rating without a review, which increases just the number of people who will rate the book. So it's much rarer for a book to be sitting there without any ratings at all. But yeah, out of those three, I would say Amazon reviews are going to be the most important. I think that readers don't really particularly care about things like New York Times bestseller, USA Today bestseller, or a really good review from those type of publications or Kirkus or something like that. And book awards, a lot of readers aren't aware of the various organizations. So as an author, we're very focused on things like the Hugo Award or the Nebula Award or the Ritas, and those are important accolades to some authors in the author community, but they're not going to be recognizable to most readers. And that's not to say that there aren't readers out there who will make a purchasing decision based on that. I would just say that it's not something that is going to be particularly important. What I will say with the ads is if you have a really enthusiastic reader review quote from Amazon that you use in the ads, that's going to 9 times out of 10 completely trounce any sort of award or editorial review quote that you can find. So the reviews are very helpful for advertising in that capacity, using them in ads and stuff like that. I think on the Amazon page itself, just from a conversion perspective and generating sales, I don't think that they make a huge impact. So your cover, blurb, those are going to be much more important. So if you're just starting out and worried about not having that many reviews or ratings, then I would really focus on the packaging with the blurb, cover, your title, your series title. Make sure that those are all as tight as possible, since those are going to be more important.
Yeah, I should have worded it Kindle ratings and reviews. I'm still programming into the ratings aspect of
It's
getting that.
new.
So yeah, from my from my experience, I pretty much would have answered it very similar to you. The only difference is I feel like if you can, once you start to snowball all those, like just saying like author's like, oh, I want to have a Kirkus review, and you get this great Kirkus review, the greatest book ever written. Well, that Kirkus review on your product page with no awards and no ratings or reviews, like you said, it's not going to help your conversion any more than your cover and your synopsis would have. But if you've got that Kirkus review and you've got 200, and you're a 4.8 rating, your reviews, and you've won a couple book awards, and maybe you have some other author reviews, and you stack those on the page, I think once you start to get all of those together, then you've created a really strong, a chance for conversion on your product page. But just one without the other, isn't necessarily going to automatically make, new conversions.
Yeah, I'd say that the people that I work with who are making good money, I can't really think of many that have the professional reviews or any of the accolades like USA Today bestseller or award winner. There are a couple, but their numbers and what they're doing career-wise doesn't look different than someone without those. So certainly, if I was to focus on one, I would focus on trying to deliver a product that readers are going to be enthusiastic enough to give you good reviews for, because that's going to be the highest leverage of those three and probably the one that you have the most control over. It's still only indirect control, but certainly with awards or the editorial reviews, you can't necessarily dictate how that's going to go. It's not something within your control. There's a limited number of slots in any of those situations. So you get, it's a numbers game, and it's hard to even be nominated for things like that. So the reviews, if you can deliver a product that readers enjoy, I think that's much more realistic to build that up. And again, if you don't have a bunch of reviews and you're just starting out, I just focus on the product and the packaging, since those are what will generate those good reviews. So the reviews are a byproduct of what you're doing. They're not a catalyst.
So do you, in terms of doing promotions for your ebook, are you a big, like, do you lean towards, you know, doing more ebook giveaways, or more of like a, you know, the discounted Kindle Countdown deal, 99 cents or so? And what strategies, you know, do you consider when you're making that decision?
I do both. I think it depends on a few factors. With the free giveaways, one, it depends on whether you have a BookBub featured deal. So BookBub, if they accept you for free, that's a big help, and that can push a lot of downloads. So I would, if they accept a book for free, then I would build around that and maybe do a Kindle Countdown deal on some of the other titles in the series. If I don't have a BookBub, then a lot of times I'm going to gravitate towards the Kindle Countdown deals, where I'll do books 1, 2, and 3 for 99 cents each, or books 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You can do as many as you want for 99 cents and 99p in the UK each. And I find that that, if you sell enough books, gives you a nice algorithmic boost. And also you're selling books, so you're getting a lot of books on people's Kindles. You're getting that 70% royalty rate with the Kindle Countdown deals. And that is what I prefer if I have a decent budget to work with. So something like $1,500, $2,000 plus dollars. If, going back to the free component, if the budget is less, if you say have $250 or $500 to work with, the free runs become a lot more useful in conjunction with those Kindle Countdown deals. So you can give away book 1 for free and then books 2 and 3 for 99 cents. And you can get a lot of volume download wise for book 1 for much cheaper than you can selling books. It's just easier to produce a free download. It's much cheaper to do so via the promo sites. And that can be a good way to get a lot of visibility if you have a more limited budget. And then finally, the other thing that you can do with the Kindle Countdown deals is you don't have to do this big ad spend or this giant promotion. You can do a smaller one where maybe you book a few promo sites, or you just send it to your newsletter and you have like a deal of the week or a deal of the month where you have one book for 99 cents, or you could do 1, 2, and 3 for 99 cents. And that's a good way to build engagement with your newsletter, give them something of value for being a subscriber, and also sell a decent number of copies of the book. And when you're doing that smaller Kindle Countdown deal, it's much less about the algorithms and much more about just selling some books to generate sell through to the rest of the series. So if you sell 50 books, 100 books at 99 cents, then you have those on people's Kindles. You made 50, 70 bucks that day, but also you have those books sitting there to generate read through over the next 2 weeks, month, 2 months. And that can be helpful as a smaller promotion as well. So they're pretty versatile for multiple budget scenarios.
So on the amount of days, my strategy is I try to consider, you know, like for an ebook giveaway, if you're doing 4 days in a row, you obviously want to have a promotion or something running during those 4 days. You know, you don't want to just do 4 days and you have like book one, you know, say book one is on free Booksy, or day one is on free Booksy, and then day 2, 3, 4, you have nothing. Is that kind of how you view it as well? Like same with the countdown deal, is if you have if you've got paid, you know, something scheduled, some kind of ad or promotion running, then more days is not necessary, can be beneficial. But if not, you don't really want to add more days.
I usually do the full five for the free books and then the full seven for the Kindle Countdown deals. I think what you want to do if you have limited promotional firepower is either shorten that maybe a little bit. The fewest I would do with the Kindle Countdown deals is 5 days, just because if you're looking for an algorithmic boost, really you need about 5 days of sales that are coming in for the algorithms to take notice of that. If you do it for only a couple of days, then they kind of disregard that as a one-off type of spike. So what I tend to do there is test early in the Kindle Countdown deal. If I'm doing something aggressive, where I'll test with the BookBub ads, the Facebook ads, and make sure that I have some ads that are working, some audiences that are working. And then if that's all sorted out by the middle of the promo, I'll just kind of let things coast a little bit, dial down the ad spend, and then I'll really ramp up where I'm spending 50, 60, 70% of my budget on those final 2 days to end with a big splash and hopefully come off that promotion at peak rank. And that's typically how I'll organize things. And if I have a smaller budget, then what I might do is just spread things out where it's more consistent. So with the promo sites, one of the benefits is you can tell, say, Bargain Booksy or Free Booksy, hey, I want this specific day. And if it's available and they confirm it, then you're booked in for that day. So you know that that's going to be on January 25th. And then you can say, okay, I'm going to slot this other site in January 26th and 27th, et cetera. And there's kind of a way to basically make sure that those sales are relatively consistent over that period of time, however long that you choose to run them for. So that's probably the way I would do it with a more limited budget, where you're spreading out the promo sites a little bit more and spreading out your ad spend. And that can be a way to sustain things for the duration of the promo.
Yeah, we run our ebook giveaways for 4 days for the free days. We don't do five, and I'll tell you why. Because we have a full our staff. One of our staff, one of our things we do monthly is obviously submit a lot of titles for BookBub feature deals, and we want to make sure in coordination, you know, that when someone does land a free promo, you don't want to go click on the book and say you have 0 free days remaining. So we always. We don't, no one does over four. It's a four limit, because we want to, you know, unless obviously we've already landed the BookBub feature deal. Yeah, so that's kind of one of our internal rules, is you got to have that one free day available for a BookBub feature deal every 90 days.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess when you said four. That makes sense. So with the free runs, just for clarification, for anyone listening, you're not going to get as much of an algorithmic boost. So that kind of 5 day rule or rule of thumb, really, more than a rule, everything with the algorithms is relatively fluid and they're all just best practices-ish rather than absolutely set in stone. With the free runs, you're not getting as much of an algorithmic pop because they don't influence the algorithms as much. So if you do a free day or a couple free days, then that's definitely a viable strategy. With the free runs, you're really looking for download volume more so than the big algorithmic boost. So the money with the free runs is in the sell-through to books two, three, four, et cetera. So you're really looking to maximize download volume there. So that can definitely work where you're doing shorter free runs.
For sure. All right, well, let's tackle those the big three on the paid ads. And if you want to find out more really good tips and insight from Nicholas, you can visit his website, which we'll go over in a little bit, or listen to him on the SPF podcast with James Blanch and Mark Dawson, where he touches on Amazon BookBub and Facebook. And so that would be kind of, you can go listen to that and then come back, listen to this again, because we're going to cover some that he I think a few topics that we he hasn't really talked about. So the first one is on the Amazon. Let's go to Amazon ads. Do you have a system, something that you kind of do every time for selecting Amazon ad keywords?
Yeah, it's probably not as fancy as people are thinking. I go to Amazon and then I look at the books that are similar and I hand curate all the keywords. So I don't use any tools as of this point. I've tried many tools. What I do is I pull the keywords, or usually what I'm doing is targeting by ASIN, and I'll look through the list and I'll pull all the ones that I feel are relevant to that book based on the branding, based on what subgenre they're in. And I try to match that as best I can, because with Amazon, the precision of the targeting is really important for the relevance. And since the clicks are fairly expensive, especially when you're targeting by ASIN, you have a higher chance of converting if you're precise with those. So with a keyword tool, it's going to spit out a lot of stuff that is not relevant. And you can certainly upload that to Amazon and then sift through the data, but you're going to burn a lot of money. And especially at 50 cents, 75 cents a dollar a click, you can be talking about $500,000 easy on things that were never going to convert. So that's just my way of sorting through that and basically being my own filter there. So a bit time consuming, but I get exactly what I want to target that way.
Right, and so on the A Center, you would be doing product targeting ads, then I'm guessing on those.
So I do the ASINs. It depends. You can do the keywords, you can do exact match with the book titles. With the book titles, a lot of them might be a single word.
So
So
you run in the, yeah, you run, especially if you go with the broad keyword. And the word is trust. Obviously, that's a there's a lot of variation in there.
You'll get results for hundreds of books that are going to span across multiple genres. If you have a thriller, then there may be romances and fantasy books and sci-fi books and all sorts of other unrelated genres that share that word or part of that word.
Yeah, and using the keyword programs, obviously they're super fast, but like you said, you wish it would narrow it down to exactly what you're looking for, which it doesn't always do. And one of the main reasons is, I'm sure you're aware, is that I wish Amazon would do a little bit better job of allowing, of sifting through which books apply for which categories, and stop putting, men without shirts in every category. Because if you go look at the top Westerns, there's at the top 50 Westerns, there's probably 25 Westerns and then 25 men in the snow with no shirt on. And it's, like a romance. And you're like, that's when I think Western, I don't think of, some, an erotic cowboy book. So.
Yeah, some of those might be there because people entered just the keyword Western
Yes.
in the little box. So sometimes Amazon does that for people, which isn't necessarily helpful for those authors in that instance. It's not helping them sell books, since someone looking for a Western is probably looking for a different type of experience.
Right.
And the other thing that I do with the keywords that is a little bit less painful from a time perspective than immediately diving into the ASINs is, first you set up a broad keyword campaign where you just take authors in your subgenre. So you curate the authors in your subgenre who are similar to you. So say for my urban fantasy books, I would take someone like Shane Silvers and K.F. Green and C.N. Crawford and Orlando Sanchez and people like that who write urban fantasy. And some of those may hew more towards paranormal romance, but they're still close enough to urban fantasy that I would feel comfortable with putting them in this broad match campaign. And you just enter their author name in it, And then you run that, and basically, what is getting a good CTR there, anything that's converting, you can then dive further into and pull all those ASINs. So it prevents you from a scenario where you basically have this list of 50 authors and you mine all the ASINs by hand, which takes hours, and then you find that some of them don't work and you're wasting your money and your time on them. You're going to be able to see that in the broad match campaign. So the cutoff that I use there is a 0.2% CTR. Anything above that, I feel, is relevant. Anything below that is going to not be as relevant and targeted as I want. And the cutoff can vary based on genre. So for romance, I would probably use 0.25%. For most genres, I'm going to use 0.2. For thriller and mystery and things that are really broad, the type of airport paperback mystery and thrillers that some authors write, I would use 0.1 since those are just have massive appeal. But for most books, 0.2. And the other thing is, if something is converted and it's below 0.2, then I'll still look at the ASINs and take those and put them in a different campaign. So that's one trick that can really help cut down on that process, because instead of doing it for 50 authors or 100 authors, you're probably only going to end up doing it for 8 or 9, and then you can use those ASINs and basically save yourself a bunch of time.
Do you mainly target, obviously you just talked of the ASINs and then author names and book titles, but do you target like genre tropes very often, where you're, like psychological thriller and a keyword targeting or something along those lines, even more specific than that, but do you do a lot of targeting in that manner?
Yeah, the genre itself is going to be pretty expensive. So urban fantasy or psychological thriller, contemporary romance, those are all going to be expensive terms. And I don't find that usually they convert that well. You can certainly test that with your own books. But with related adjectives like gripping or snarky for urban fantasy, thrilling, page turner, whatever, that's not something that I've tested a ton. So I'm always trying to come up with different keyword targeting ideas. You can also target things like nouns related to your subgenre. So in urban fantasy, that would be wizard, werewolf, warlock, etc. And you can experiment with that and see. What I try to do usually is focus on the author names and authors and the ASINs when I'm doing the targeting first, just because those are going to be the most relevant usually for what I'm looking for. If someone's searching for the latest Jim Butcher book and they're a fan of urban fantasy, then appearing on Jim Butcher's page in that sponsored ads carousel is probably going to get me in front of relevant readers. So that's going to be my first kind of go-to there with the author names and the titles. But one way to find things that are off the beaten path rather than coming up with them on your own, because that can be difficult even if you sit down and brainstorm, is go into your auto ads or category ads and go to the search term reporting, and it'll show you what terms and books people came from to click on your ad, and you'll find titles that you wouldn't have thought of, authors that you wouldn't have thought to test, and also just long tail keywords, which are 3, 4 words long. So they're phrases. And sometimes you can find stuff in there that's converting well, and you can take it and put it in its own campaign of keywords or ASINs that have converted well.
That makes good sense. On the Amazon ads, do you prefer to scale up or scale down? Like, start obviously low bid or high bid and try to get data quick, or just kind of, work your way in.
It's going to depend on the budget. So generally, the authors who I work with at this point have probably higher budgets than most authors to begin with, just because I'm working with authors who are full-time authors. They've been writing for a while now and have established fan bases. So when I'm coming in, it's usually my job to try to get them results relatively quickly. And so I'm going to start high there to get the ad serving. If your budget is more limited, then you can start lower and then come in every 3 to 4 days or every week. One of the most useful things with Amazon ads is just setting a day where you go in and adjust your bids, prune bad keywords, add any new targets, things like that. That may not sound like enough time, but it usually is with the budgets that most authors are running, and it ensures that you're actually doing that refinement process. So most people put up the ads and then they do nothing. And if you just have a day every week where you go in and refine, then you can really hone in on the keywords and targets that are going to work. But what you can do is start at, say, 40 cents or 30 cents or whatever, wait a week, see if you're getting any impressions. If you're not getting any impressions, then either the stuff you're targeting isn't relevant or your bid is too low. That's usually going to be the main two culprits there. You can increase the bid then from 40 cents to 46 cents. If that's not working, then you can go to 50 cents, et cetera. So you can gradually push that up until you hit that crossover point. And that takes more time, obviously, but you're also not going to spend a bunch of money at a bid that maybe, if you have a lower budget, eats into your overall ad spend for that month. So there are multiple ways to approach it. I prefer to get them running fast just because it's also easier from a management perspective. People get bored with the Amazon ads very quickly when they're not running at all and not serving, and then they kind of just forget about them. So they say that they're going to bump up the bid, but then just from an adherence perspective, a lot of times that doesn't happen, and that ad sits there at 40 cents for 4 months before it finally gets turned off after serving 1,200 impressions or whatever. So I would usually prefer to start higher and then go lower and just keep an eye on things, keep it on a tight leash at the beginning and calibrate it that way, but can do either.
Let's switch over to BookBub ads. I know this one's your favorite. So, I've shared it with my authors and you've shared it in your past talks of targeting author, you know, and then also choosing a category on BookBub ads. How do you choose your authors? Again, it's probably similar to Amazon. And then how many authors do you recommend putting on one ad?
Okay. So with testing, I'll test one author per ad at a time. And that's just mandatory with the way the BookBub ads work at this point. If you have multiple authors in the ad, then you can't see what did what CTR wise. So one author might be at 5%, the other one might be at 2.5% or 0%. And you don't know from the data what is going on there.
It has to reach a certain amount of impressions first. Yeah. Is that your, If you have 20 authors, you know, it might take you, you know, 40 days before, you know, even if your ad's running well, it might take you 40 days before you see all the data for all those authors. You know, you might see like two or three early, and then it'll keep adding them as they reach those impressions. But like you said, you're the ones that haven't reached that threshold, you have no clue what's going on.
Yeah. That's going to take 1,000 impressions per author. And 1,000 impressions is usually going to cost you at least $10 up to 15 plus in some genres. So, you know, you can do the math there where it's going to be pretty expensive to get that. And you can't direct what impressions go where when you have 40 authors in in ad. So usually what happens is that the biggest authors are going to get the bulk of those, and then the smaller authors are going to get far fewer impressions. And what you can do is you can test them one by one for much cheaper and much quicker. And you can give each audience $5. So that's how I start. I give each audience $5, target it by itself. And then if it's promising at the end of that $5, meaning above 2% CTR, that's going to be my cutoff in most genres, except for crime and thriller, where I use 1.5%, then I'll give it another amount of budget. So either I'll go to 8 or 12, so an additional $3 to $7. And if it's still good at the end of that, then I might do one more bump up where I take that same ad and just give it an additional $8, so maybe like $20 total to confirm. And if it passes through all those tests, then what I'll do later is aggregate the best performing audiences together. But by going through that series of tests, you weed out things along the way that are not good performers to begin with. So if something spends $5 and gets zero clicks, it's not going to be a sick audience at $12. So that just prevents unnecessary ad spend going to waste there. And then sometimes something will look really good at $5. So for $5, you're going to get maybe 400, 500 impressions. It's not a huge sample size. So what can happen is you can have something that looks really good after $5, and then you bump it up to $8 or $12, and all of a sudden the CTR drops significantly. And that gradual increase will weed out things that were fool's gold instead of immediately aggregating them all together after $5. So in the past, what I would do is after $5 or $8, I would pretty much take the audiences and aggregate them together, meaning the best performing audiences. And sometimes performance for that aggregate audience would just crater. And it took me a long time to figure out that what was happening is some of those audiences were basically not actually replicating their performance because they had just had a good run over that $5. And by increasing that ad spend to those audiences that were promising, then that allowed me to basically have another filter there and ensure that the aggregate audiences were more stable when I aggregated everything together. So to answer your question about where I find the audiences, the best place to find the audiences is in the BookBub email. Anybody who's running BookBub ads tends to be the best target, because the way BookBub ads work is when someone clicks on your ad, they're added to your author audience. So people who are in someone's audience running BookBub ads, they A, click on BookBub ads, and B, are fans of that subgenre. So that's exactly the audience you're looking for. And you also look for people, obviously, in your subgenre. On BookBub, I tend to find that the best targets are authors with readers, the reader count between 3,000 to 25,000. I'd say like 3,000 to 15,000 tends to be the best. Obviously, sometimes you find something at 25 or 35 that is really effective, so I wouldn't rule those out. Anything above 45 tends to be more on the miss side. Again, there are exceptions, but certainly anything above that is usually going to be pretty rough from a CTR perspective.
Yeah, you better be bringing already a really established and good author and known author if you want to compete with those, the big boys.
So I would say that that's basically how I approach the audience targeting. The audience is by far the most important thing on BookBub. So creative does play a role, but if you're having trouble with BookBub, usually it's you haven't tested enough audiences. And just for some context, I think for the one of the last promos that I ran, I tested something like 200 audiences. And it's definitely a grind, but the more audiences you test, the more chance you find of uncovering those gems that are 3%, 4%, et cetera, in your subgenre, and getting cheap enough clicks where you can scale things up and really harness the benefits of BookBub.
So are you referring to, so on the BookBub ads, you answered my next questions already. The only last one was the, are you running mostly the cost per click, or are you doing the cost per thousand impressions when you're talking about the initial $5 and how you're, you know, getting your data?
I do CPM, which is the cost per thousand impressions. It just has a smoother fulfillment in that if you bid enough and you're going to get those impressions, you may not get any clicks, but you're going to get the impressions. When you bid by click, or when you choose the cost per click option, sometimes you don't get the ad shown very much. So it really depends on A, how much you bid, and then B, how well your ad is performing, and the serving can be more erratic there. So if you're doing something that's time sensitive, I usually use the BookBub ads for things like Kindle Countdown deals, then the CPM is going to reliably spend your budget. That's not to say that CPC can't work. I haven't used it a ton, but I think that there's room to explore there. If you're running things like backlist ads where you can work on the bids, try to dial them in a bit over time, and you're fine with spending lower amounts that may fluctuate a little bit day to day. So they would work more like, I would say, Amazon ads in that respect, where Amazon ads sometimes spend $8, sometimes they're spending $15, $12. The serving is much less consistent with the CPC on the BookBub ads than it is with CPM. So if you're doing it for backlist, that's something that I think you can explore and presents an untapped opportunity for authors. But for the limited time discounts, I would use the CPM, because if you give it $50 and you're spending and your CPM is high enough, then you're going to get served, which is what you're looking for in that scenario.
Switching to Facebook ads. On the Facebook ad targeting, do you tend to target more like genre and trying to hit genre interests on Facebook, or are you targeting trying to find similar authors on Facebook?
I usually start with the authors. I find that the authors are usually the cheapest targets and the most relevant. And then I'll branch out into the subgenres, which come in second a lot of time. And those results can flip-flop a bit, but that's usually the breakdown that I see there. And the genres are quite useful because they tend to be larger, and that just gives you more audience to scale out to if you're trying to increase your ad spend on Facebook. In a lot of genres, the authors are going to start fatiguing much sooner just because there's a limited author pool outside of larger genres like romance or thrillers, crime, mystery. So that's where the genres become more useful. And then I use lookalikes. Those are also useful for scaling. Those can be hit or miss depending on how good the source audience that the lookalike is sampling is. So you have to test different lookalikes, but those can be useful for scaling, since a 1% lookalike in the US is around 2.4 million people at this point, which is larger than most of the interests and genre stuff that's available to us.
So how do you find do you have a method for finding your target interests on Facebook ads?
Basically, I type them into the box and see what pops up. and then go and look at suggested. So I'll type in James Patterson, and then when you type that in, you'll get suggested a bunch of stuff like Lee Kyle and Shannon Devonovich, etc. And you can pull a lot of stuff that way. The other way is to look at the Amazon side and just type in James Patterson and then look through his also bots, look through the sponsored ads carousel for traditionally published authors, look at the top 100 as well. You need to look for traditionally published authors because indies are not typically targetable on Facebook. There are a couple, but for the most part, they aren't. So you're really looking for really big traditionally published authors there. The other thing that you can do is if you go up to the menu in the Facebook Ads Manager, you can look at this tool that is the Affinity Audiences tool, and you can type in, say, James Patterson there, and what it's going to do is tell you similar audiences that people who like James Patterson also like, and that can be useful for just finding different stuff to target as well. So you'll find movies, media interests, celebrities, stuff like that. A lot of things won't necessarily be relevant, but occasionally something will pop out that is useful. So that's called Audience Insights, if you want to check that out.
Do you combine your interest with like reader, like their, I can't even think of the term that Facebook uses now, not demographic, but the, like, say, you know, their one of their interests is Kindle, like they like Kindle readers or they like Kobo, and then you combine that with your interest. Do you do that a lot, or do you just, you know, do you leave that part out?
I come around and test it infrequently, you know, every couple months, and sometimes depending on what I'm doing for a certain promotion or launch or ads, I'll test it out. But usually I'm just doing the audiences by themselves without any sort of demographic narrowing with age ranges or gender or anything like the additional audience interests that you can stack together. So I'm not taking James Patterson and then narrowing it by the Kindle store and then people who also like thrillers, et cetera. I'll just usually use the standard James Patterson audience because Facebook's algorithms are really advanced. And if you give them a general direction to go into, then they can typically find what you're looking for and the best clicks for your subgenre than you can by directing it. So I would usually err on the side of giving Facebook control over the audience side. The part where I see most authors not do enough is they'll really do this really granular targeting and then they won't test any creatives. So Facebook doesn't have a lot of machine and automated systems that can build creatives. That's still a human endeavor, and that's your responsibility as the advertiser to put those together. And just testing a bunch of different ads there is your highest leverage point and the thing that's going to usually make the biggest difference. So the audience is definitely important, but I'm usually going to leave those fairly standard. And by that, I mean, I've run tens of thousands of dollars in ad spend over the past year to things like E.L. James and contemporary romance, just really basic things where the stuff you should be focusing on comes into play is testing a bunch of different ads so that you're finding what angle resonates best with those readers, because that's just something that Facebook can't do at this point.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I've got our short story section with Nicholas Eric, a few rapid fire questions. Are you ready for those? All right. Favorite movie based on a book?
Ooh. I just watched, it used to be called The Edge of Tomorrow. Now it's called Live, Die, Repeat. And that was based on a Japanese light novel called All You Need Is Kill. So that's a time loop movie. And that's pretty good. I've watched that a couple times.
Favorite author?
I'm not sure that I have a favorite author. I think I'm looking for different things from different authors. I really like John D. McDonald and Elmore Leonard's writing style. And so we can go with that, but I don't know if I would classify them as favorite in the traditional sense, but I really respect their style and voices quite a bit.
All right, we haven't even said the P word yet, but what is your favorite quarantine / pandemic activity?
I've just been working for the most part through the duration of 2020 and now into 2021. So I don't know if that qualifies as a favorite activity, but that's what I've been spending most of my time doing, just running ads and trying to improve.
Yeah, probably similar to me in the sense that it really doesn't affect your day-to-day that much.
Yeah, I would say that I have been spending about the same time indoors that I did prior, so it hasn't affected my workflow or life too significantly, which I'm thankful for.
All right, to celebrate, you know, when you had one of your books release, what do you prefer to eat? What's your go-to meal?
I'd say pizza.
Is there, you got a specific, type of pizza, a certain place that you like it from more than others, or are you a deep dish or like a thin crust guy?
I'd say I'm pretty boring in that regard, and I just usually do the plain cheese. So that's just the standard, but I think it's a good option. So that's what I tend to
get. What about a drink? You got to go to anything to celebrate?
No, I don't really drink. So just whatever is on hand, water, soda, whatever.
What is your least favorite book genre?
Oh, that's a question where you can hit the third rail pretty fast. I'd say my least favorite book genre is probably self-help, and that I've read quite a few of those, but it has a lot of bad information in it, particularly catered toward people who are either struggling or looking to improve their lives. So I think that more due diligence and better products are required of something like that in that genre, and it doesn't meet that standard, in my opinion, most of the time. So we'll go with that.
Name a place that you haven't been yet, but someday want to travel to.
I'm not really a huge traveler, so I have traveled quite a bit in the past, but there's honestly not really anywhere that I necessarily am wanting to go. I'm more about just trying to improve what I'm doing with my skills and my craft, and that's where most of my focus lies. So there's literally no place that I'm thinking of that would come to mind.
Do you have any pets? What would be your favorite animal?
I like dogs, so dog is good pet and companion to have, certainly, and at some point probably will get a dog, but right now just kind of focused on the books and the advertising, and definitely require quite a few walks a day and things like that. So not quite ready for that at this point.
All right, that's all I've got, man. I appreciate you coming on. If there's anything, or please feel free to let our listeners know where they can find you, and you know, anything else you want to plug, please do so.
Yeah, if anybody wants to check out what I'm doing, you can head over to nicholaseric.com. So that's NICHOLAS and then Eric with a K. And there are free guides to marketing available. There's free newsletter that I send out sometimes weekly, sometimes more frequently, sometimes much less frequently. And then if you're looking for just a comprehensive guide all in one place where a lot of the information is collected, you can check out The Ultimate Guide to Book Marketing, which is available on Amazon and all other retailers currently, but that might change at some point. As we all know, marketing is fluid, so sometimes you take stuff off the other retailers and make it only available on Amazon, but right now it is available everywhere in print and ebook.
Wow, that was excellent. I hope you have a pen and paper and, you know, your notepad ready for taking notes if you're an indie author. That was some really good information from Nicholas Eric. Wrap this up by saying our next podcast will air in 3 weeks on February 26th, and it will be the second appearance for Black Rose Writing author Kristen A. Sherry, and I promise we will have a blast. It'll be a really good time. Kristen's got a new business book or lifestyle change book coming out, and also another children's book in her children's book series, the You've Got series. So be sure to tune in and have a wonderful weekend.